patient because I'm going to move things along here.
Oh, I've been patient, but I just have to say thank you to Greg. We wouldn't be here without
him. Oh, no. I'm going to ask people to not repeat and all my usual antics.
Yeah, and they will anyway. Yeah, the cough drops I had this morning have zinc in them. So after you've had a couple of them, they make your mouth really zinc.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want another name?
Another name?
Yeah, from the builder side.
Yeah.
Lori Butler.
Lori Butler. Okay, good.
So Dane Butler, Justin Wood, Castlebaum.
Okay. Yeah, you bet.
You like that.
Not so much. All right, we're going to gather back together, and we are going to speed things along. We still have 40 people, more or less, signed up to testify, which means that the amount of time you get to testify is going to shrink. And if you've already heard your point of view mentioned, then I would ask you to take your name off the list. We're looking for, we're at that time of the evening where we're looking for new issues, either positive or negative. We're not taking a vote tonight, so we're looking for the full breadth of concerns or compliments as opposed to needing to hear things over and over and over again. Hope you'll understand. So, who signed up? You were first, right?
I think so, yeah. My name is Jim Chassie. East Portland resident. As a former land use chair for the Palhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association, I've probably seen more canopy removed in my neighborhood than any other place in the city. And I've seen all the tree violations that people have mentioned. And one of the things about this particular tree policy that I don't agree with, and Commissioner Leonard brought up earlier, were some of the fines. I think they need to be more stringent. I also think that, and in my opinion, that a 12-inch diameter tree is worthy of a permit. Other than that, I'm glad that the city has finally come together with some kind of a tree plan. It's been a long time coming, and for those of the neighborhoods that are being rapidly developed, it's a huge need. So I agree with the plan, but I think it needs just a little bit more tweaking. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Good evening. I planned for 3 minutes, but I obviously will have condensed since we got here. We'll try to shorten it up.
Just say every other word.
You got it. Thank you, Mayor. The intent of this project was to streamline, consolidate, and or in layman's terms, make our existing tree code more user-friendly while also increasing the urban canopy by at least 7%. This is an extremely valuable and necessary goal. Unfortunately, it appears that somewhere along the line, staff abandoned that simple intent. This is demonstrated by the sheer volume of text and additionally in the complexity and detail. I do believe that a great deal of the content of BPS's proposal has a high value, which when modified and amended slightly will benefit Portland. I applaud staff for taking on the challenge of reducing the subjectivity contained in the present code and additionally for their efforts to create a more flexibility for the development of smaller lots. I believe this proposal can be improved greatly and achieve the intended goals as they were presented. It starts with the education of the public by educating them on the benefits of the tree canopy increase while offering them incentives to participate in the planting of trees. This is a much less oppressive approach to government. The use of non-regulatory methods can create a partnership working together towards our common goals. Trees are a major part of our identity here in Portland. They are a distinguishing characteristic of our city. They must be regulated, but they must be regulated sensibly. Trees cannot become the sole agenda of our city because that lacks balance. Representations have been made that though the Planning Commission has been very involved as part of this process, they truly only voted on conceptual ideas and direction provided by BPS staff. The actual code verbiage in its present draft form was not presented to them. If that is truly the case, it is a gross procedural error and must be corrected. Planning Commission is an integral and necessary step to utilize as part of establishing code. At this level, practicality and common sense are utilized to create the applicable criteria of which we govern by. If this step is omitted, what tools are we left to govern with? As elected officials, I know it is not your job to appease every voice and certainly not the loudest one. It is, of course, prudent to process every voice and act under what appears to be in the best interest of our city. It is certainly not in the best interest of our city to approve something that lacks clarity, direction, and has no true correlation between what problem we are trying to solve and a specific regulation. Additionally, let's not ignore the present economic climate or the elephant in the room I may present. We simply can't afford it as presented. I would again like to use the word sensible. I am pleased to hear no vote will transpire tonight. More discussion needs to occur. I think we're very close. I commend staff for their hard work. It's been a 3-year process. A few more months, a little more discussion. I think we can get something that we then, as city council, will be in a position to interpret its validity and vote on it.
Thank you, sir.
Could you give us your name, please?
My name's Corey Larner.
Thank you. I'm Janet Bibb, Principal Regional Planner at Metro, and I'm here on behalf of Smith Bybee Management Committee. There is a provision as part of the tree ordinance. It's one of the amendments that I want to call your attention to. It's 33860. It's for a comprehensive natural resources plan. This no-cost provision is of keen interest to Metro and the Smith Bybee Management Committee for several reasons. Just a quick background right now, Smith Bybee vision and coordination of all the property owners in the 2,000-acre wetland relies on an NRMP, a Natural Resources Management Plan. There are some problems. That was a document type that was adopted in 1988. In order to protect trees and all natural resources in a coordinated planning effort. It's an important concept, but it has proven ineffective for several reasons. Only 4 plans have been written using an NRMP, and none since 1997. The process requires a legislative rather than a quasi-judicial process to enact. As a result, the Smith-Bybee NRMP hasn't changed in 20 years. The changes are cumbersome and costly. The best solution for us is to replace it with the proposed comprehensive natural resources plan. The benefits of this plan type would be that landowners can develop their own plan. The judicial process will save government and landowners money and time. And this will allow us and the properties to rely on the current environmental code instead of being frozen in time to the 1990 environmental code, which is currently what happens under the Smith-Bybee NRNP. As a result, large natural properties will be able to develop more 10-year plans and move more effectively. So this is an amendment, one of the 3 that Roberta highlighted, and I wanted to call it to your attention and say that the Smith-Bybee Committee is looking forward to being able to take advantage of that change. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Next 3 are Simone Goldfeder, Paul Salamano, Dick Haney, followed by Nancy Seaton, Mike Houck, and Bob Salinger.
Good evening.
Glad you're here.
My name is Simone Goldfeder. I'm a licensed architect and co-owner of an architectural practice in the city of Portland. I'm also very active with my local neighborhood association, SWIRL, as well as a citywide land use group. I strongly support the proposed tree guidelines. The proposal allows many options and possibilities for how one can plan and approach a site using a more flexible, performance-based approach versus a prescriptive, one-size-fits-all approach. If the goal is to balance development with a healthy tree canopy, then this can be shown to be done through allowing flexibility in setbacks, height, and lot coverage requirements. The site with its existing characteristics, whether topographical, trees, solar access, adjacent context, should inform, mold, and generate the design and building of what goes on that site. There is no one solution, but many possibilities. Just as the form and cover of the urban canopy changes as trees are planted, grow, and die, our city's built and natural form evolves as well. The proposed tree policy does not limit a developer or property owner's right to develop. It only requires that we all must consider trees as an important and additional variable integrated into the design, instead of ignored or clear-cut to accommodate a cookie-cutter, template, flat, desert land approach to all sites. And then I also would like to address quickly the idea of equity. I think it's important as well. If one looks at the existing plan of the city of the city of Portland and the current canopy cover. Sorry, just one minute. It is clear that much of the existing canopy is located in the more affluent areas of the cities. It's important that we street trees and trees on private property are typically located in site front and backyards, and these are the pocket parks for many residents who have limited or no access to city parks at any scale. The loss of this vegetation greatly impacts the form, identity, and value of these neighborhoods. The proposed tree policy is an opportunity for the city of Portland to implement a strategy, policy, codes that will support many of the lofty, sustainable, and green goals that are advocated in the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Evening. I'm Paul Salamano. I'm a member of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission. Our commission has had two briefings on the tree proposal. We've heard from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Environmental Services, Portland Parks and Recreation, Urban Forestry, the Urban Forester, HAND, Save Our Elms, and quite a few individuals who are interested in the topic. Overall, we were, the testimony focused on the importance of the Norway maple to the character of Ladd's Addition Historic District and the impact its retention would have on nuisance plant control citywide. Overall, we were not convinced that allowing the Norway maple to exist in Ladd's Addition posed a significant risk to controlling nuisance plant species, at least not when weighed against the importance of the tree to the character of the historic district. Ladd's Addition is somewhat unique. Historic districts are usually defined by their vertical built environment. Ladd's Addition, the character of Ladd's Addition relies heavily on its unique urban plan and integral landscape planning. So the Ladd's Addition design guidelines, which were adopted in 1988, one of the comments in there is that mature American elms and Norway maples are a unique natural treasure and a significant part of the district's character. The Portland Landmarks Commission found that replanting as necessary with Norway maples is critical to maintaining the integrity of the historic district. As with the inevitable demise of the American elm, we understand and we're cognizant that certain district traditions sometimes must give way. We're also aware that some traditions must be modified when it is determined that they are harmful to other resources. However, given the lack of natural resource areas in close proximity to Ladd's Addition Historic District, we did not see the harm in exempting Ladd's Norway maples from the nuisance plant prohibition at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Good evening, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dick Haney. I'm Assistant Fire Marshal, Portland Fire and Rescue. I'm here to support Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's work on consolidating these tree rules into one place where they can be accessed and understood. That is very important. Portland Fire and Rescue, fire prevention, we have a little bit different twist on trees. You know, they're important public assets, but they also represent fuel. We feel that this work in Title 11 actually provides appropriate tools and flexibility to landowners, homeowners in Portland in order to do slight modifications in order to protect their homes by making defensible space. There's since this is a phased adoption, we would actually like to see the allowance in 11.40.050 to be part of the first adoption. There's also the word of the allowance for pruning shrubs has fallen out of the draft of in Title 33 at 33.430.080, and we'd like to see the word shrubs put back in. What it allows is that shrubs within 10 feet of the home would allow some pruning to make defensible space. Again, we commend the Planning Commission, and thanks for your time.
Could you please send me that by email so that I get the numbers right? Thank
Certainly.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you all very much.
Nancy Seaton, Mike Houck, Bob Salinger. They'll be followed by Linda Nedekoven, Richard Ross, Peter Livingston.
Hi, welcome back.
Hi.
Please begin.
I'm Nancy Seaton, the land use chair and board member of the Southwest Hills Residential League Neighborhood Association. We are very pleased to see these important improvements in the tree code that we in neighborhood associations have waited for and hoped for years. Trees are essential to our Southwest Hills neighborhood. Without healthy, mature trees, we could be sliding down the hill into Goose Hollow or onto Highway 26. Right now, there are so many loopholes that make it hard for our land use committees to protect trees, even in our environmental zones. We on the SWIRL Land Use Committee have often wished for clearer tree regulations, for stronger incentives for developers and homeowners to protect trees, especially significant native trees and groves. We strongly support the new protections for trees with and without development on public and private property, including non-dividable single lots, and especially in environmental overlay zones and riparian areas. We support a process where a developer considers and designs around the natural features and mature trees on a site. We'd like to see more consistent protection of stream setbacks. I support personally pretty much all of the elements of the proposal, the summary that BPS has prepared. I think it's time to put our money where our mouth is. We need to grow our urban tree canopy. And to do that, we need to have zoning codes that work for, not against, that goal. We really appreciate the efforts of the Tree Project team. They've done an excellent job. We urge you to support this needed update to Portland's tree policies.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Adams, Commissioners, my name is Mike Houck. I'm here representing the Urban Green Spaces Institute tonight. And I will just add parenthetically, I sit on the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I would like to correct, I think, a misconception by an earlier testifier. I know Don testified tonight, and having sat on the commission, I know that the Planning Commission at that time spent a lot of time looking at the details, and I think Don articulated that well tonight. I just really want to make two points. First of all, Mike Rosen earlier, I think, made the point I want to reiterate now, and that is the city is spending all this money on Greta Green, which is fabulous. Trees are clearly one of the most important elements of the green infrastructure of the city. And to me, it just makes no sense, on the one hand, to be putting out $55 million in the Greta Green effort, which is fabulous, and not pass this ordinance and not fund it. It would be penny wise and pound foolish. I realize that the budgets are an issue for you all, but the amount of money that would be invested in this will be paid back. You heard the value is, I don't know if it's $5 billion or $10 billion of the existing urban forest canopy. It will only increase over time. And the second point I want to address is I've heard that there are those, and I've heard this argument over the years, and I tell you, it upsets me a great deal, is that there have been arguments made that we can't afford to protect natural resources. We can't afford to have too many parks and green spaces, because Metro has mandated that we have to meet certain density requirements. That's a bogus issue, and I'm tired of hearing about it. And in fact, in 1996, Mike Burton, when he was president of Metro Council, introduced a resolution that the full Metro Council adopted, a green spaces resolution, which said, if the cities and counties protect natural resources in perpetuity and provide parks for folks, we will not hold them to these targets. They're not cast in stone, by the way. So there will be people who will make that argument, which is a bogus one. This thing has been tweaked to death. I cannot believe, I mean, I know Bob sits through a lot of meetings, every other Friday for 4 hours for a year. This has been looked at enough. It needs to be adopted now, and it needs to be funded, and I urge you to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Salinger.
Good evening. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for Audubon Society of Portland. We're here tonight to urge you to adopt and fund this plan. We did serve on the committee. We thought it was a very good process. We thank Roberta Jortner and Bureau of Planning. And I think it's really important to note that this did originate as a grassroots effort. It was Southwest community that realized that this was a real problem, and it is a real problem. We have a $5 billion asset. We're spending millions of dollars a year to plant new trees, but we're barely holding steady in terms of improvement. At the rate we're currently going, it'll take more than a century and a half to reach our 33% canopy target. And despite spending millions of dollars, we're losing our trees through a variety of reasons for illegal cutting, poor care, poor maintenance. This is a good plan, and this will solve some of those problems through increased regulation, increased education, and increased enforcement. It's also a great return on investment. I've served on a lot of committees, as Mike noted, and I think it's really notable that this one came back with a plan that will cost about $250,000 for 2 years to develop and another $150,000 after fees to implement. That's a bargain, $150,000 a year, great return on investment. So a few issues. We submitted detailed comments. I want to put a few on your radar screen right now. Protection of trees on undividable residential lots. That's already come up tonight. I'm glad it's come up. We think 20 inches is too big. We'd like to see it go back to 12 inches. I think that's a matter of equity. I live in King neighborhood. We don't have very many big trees. I don't think we have any the size of 20 inches. And so the neighborhoods that don't have trees are going to continue to lose them, and they're not going to be replaced. And so I think that's an important issue. Exemptions for small lots. We think it makes sense to regulate even below 3,000 square feet because they have an option. They can mitigate off-site. So if they can't plant on-site, they can at least contribute to the canopy, and we all should contribute. Third, exemptions for historic districts. We would urge you not to provide exemptions for Ladd's Addition or any other historic district. We spent a long time trying to get our invasive species list consolidated and complete without exceptions. There was a lot of opposition to it. We're finally there. We're spending a fortune on invasive species. We shouldn't start going backwards. And the last thing I want to put on your radar screen is industrial lands. I know there's discussion about exempting industrial lands due to the Luber ruling. We would urge you to, at minimum, postpone it if you have to do anything at all. But we think industrial lands should be included. We all need to step up industrial lands, residential lands, and contribute to our canopy. So thank you very much.
Thank you all.
I did have one question. Bob, maybe you can answer this as opposed to the staff, and it was about the Norway maple. What is it about it that makes it an invasive species? What is it that we're concerned about?
They proliferate and grow like weeds, and so they take over habitat areas. They're becoming one of the most dominant trees in the city. And so when the invasive species list was refined, the concern was that they're spreading into places that we don't want them. And
do you have empirical data to support that?
The city certainly does, yeah. So, the idea that is far from a natural area isn't compelling. They are actually near places like Mount Tabor, Oaks Bottom, and once they're in the system, they spread through wildlife. You know, birds carry seeds around, and so there's an effort to reduce them in the city, and that went through a long scientific process. I mean, there was a lot of work that went into that list. It was reviewed, and there was opportunities for testimony. So it's unfortunate to see it being carved away now, potentially.
Good, thanks.
Thank you all.
Linda Netikoven, Richard Ross, Peter Livingston. They'll be followed by Toby Deming, Ali Young, Kathy Sheeran.
Welcome back. Glad you're here. Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Linda Netikoven, and I'm vice chair of the Hossford Abernathy Neighborhood Association. Mayor Adams and commissioners, appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. I'm here for four reasons, basically. First, to express our thanks to the council for allocating the resources in the first place that allowed this comprehensive and much-needed effort to take place, and to also express our appreciation for the comprehensive staff work that's gone on. We want to strongly support, offer our general overall support for the tree code. And at the same time, we would like to request an exception for the replanting of Norway maples in Ladd's Addition on the few streets within the Ladd's Addition Historic District planting plan where those trees are recommended. I'd like to call your attention. There's a packet that's been, I believe, left for you. It contains a letter from authored by Dave Kaplan, who is the chair of Save Our Elms and also a long-term hand board member, which lays out what we feel are some of the pros and cons and the balancing act that we're asking you to take on in this situation where we're looking at the value of cultural and historical resources balanced against, not against, but finding a way to balance both the need for preservation of natural resources and wild spaces. We don't like to just kind of come forward and complain about things. We've also tried to draft some language, some possible amendments. Those are also in the packet, and just wanted to speak to those. There's one thing about our situation when the Lads Edition District was created. As the gentleman from Landmarks has just indicated, there's a particular role that the landscaping plays in the district, and we're looking at a way to strengthen and clarify as our first step the wording within the Lads Edition Conservation District guidelines themselves. They were crafted at a time when the National Historic Trust folks didn't include that kind of landscaping language usually in an application. They do now. And we would like to clarify that and use that language in turn to amend Title 11 so that there could be an exception for LADS.
Thank you.
Richard Ross, I've been a resident of Southeast since 1967. I'm here tonight representing Save Our Elms, which has affiliates in seven neighborhoods in the city, but we are an equal opportunity forestry group. We plant all kinds of trees, and our affiliates do too. I'm past chair of the Lads Edition District Council, which developed the guidelines, which are in dispute tonight or about to be amended, and also was on the Urban Forestry Commission. I appreciate the Landmarks Commission's recommendation to you. We think they are right on target. I want to point out that we're talking about perhaps 400 to 500 Norway maples in Lads Edition out of 21,000 in the city. At least half of those Norway maples have been planted by community action in the last 20 years. I want to call your attention to a letter in our packet, which has a red folder. I don't know if you've gotten the packet, but the letter is from Keith Warren, who is the arborist and product manager for the nation's biggest street tree grower, J. Frank Schmidt, in Gresham. And he presented this to the Landmarks Commission, and it has compelling testimony about the invasive nature of Norway maples or how they actually work. To his credit, he's on the Oregon Invasive Species Council. He is on the National Nursery Association Task Force on Invasive Species. He found that LADS is a low-risk area given its lack of proximity and the fact that Norway maples behave differently in the Northwest than they do in the Northeast, where they have been banned by several states. To cut to the chase on the issues of whether or not the actual tree being planted here has problems with verticillium wilt, as was stated earlier, all maples have problems with this disease. It's a tree, it's a soil disease. However, the version being planted, we have nice pictures of it for you, from the Washington State University Extension Service, says that this is not a major problem for this tree in the Pacific Northwest. We chose this tree 15 years ago with the advice of Schmidt's Nursery and the City Forestry Department specifically because it has a better survival rate against this particular problem. But verticillium wilt is not like Dutch elm disease. Dutch elm disease, which we're working on also with all of our affiliates, is a very serious problem, and you can't plant American elms again. You have to plant new cultivars. And that's what we're doing, and that's what's being done all over the city by Friends of Trees and other groups. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ross.
I'm Peter Livingston, and I have submitted photographs of the trees in Lads Edition. The first page is the trees taken, a photograph taken in the summer, and the next page is photographs taken in the fall where you can see how there is a contrast between the sugar maple, which is the suggested replacement tree, and the Norway maple, which is what we presently have. The Norway maple is a yellow tree, and it is an ornamental that is essential to the uniformity of the street plan. We have spoken at length to the staff, to the experts, and to, and we've listened to the evidence. The evidence is confined to a couple of studies which do not study Norway maple samaras, but other plants. And the assumption appears to be that somehow the seeds are being carried over 2 miles to natural areas and are germinating there. If you think about the sheer physical dynamics of that, the problem becomes minute. And the neighbors have made a huge commitment to the trees in Ladd's Addition. We started planting these trees in 1985, and over time we've planted hundreds and hundreds of trees. And part of the inspiration for that was to restore the historic character of the district. And the Norway maple was essential to approximately half the streets. Is that my timer?
You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. You're okay.
So we've taken this historic mission very seriously. We've carried out a plan that was conceived 25 years ago. And we believe that if you balance the importance of the historic character of the district against the very slim possibility that any Norway maple samaras are going to be carried over 2 miles to a natural area, you will agree with us that this is a balance that should favor the historic nature of the district. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony. Sue, how many more signed up?
24.
All right. Well, we're down to a minute.
40. Tony Deming, Ali Young, Kathy Sheeran. They'll be followed by Laurie Butler, Justin Wood, John Fiocchi.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Toby Deming. I live in Ladd's Addition. I didn't wear my coat and tie. I'm the guy who plants the trees. I've been living in Ladd's Addition for over 20 years. We've planted many Norway maples, and as they testified, in the last 15 years, we've been exclusively planting the Emerald Queens, which are resilient, more resilient to the verticillium wilt, and all those trees are doing beautifully in our neighborhood. From a tree planting standpoint, I would like to recommend that you reduce the 3-inch caliper down to a 2-inch. 3-inch is significantly more expensive than a 2-inch. 3-inch requires an immense amount of land or manpower to plant. 2-inch is much more user-friendly. I would also like to support the 12-inch diameter for cutting versus the 20. And as a member of Ladd's, living in Ladd's Addition, we appreciate the special regulations that you're putting under us. We've never been honored that way, so thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, my name's Allie Young. I'm a Ladd's Addition resident, and I'd like to City Council to know that I'm opposed to planting Norway maple as a replacement tree in my parking strip. I'm not opposed to the spirit of the historic tree plan and commend the work of Save Our Elms to protect the American elm. However, Norway maples are invasive. Their seeds spread beyond 2 miles, choke out native trees, and compromise the health of the extensive natural area network the city has worked so hard to build. Norway maples have been found on Mount Tabor, Reed Canyon, and other local natural areas with no nearby parent tree source. BES staff can confirm this. Their seeds collect in wheel wells, windshields, roof racks, bike fenders, and blow outside the neighborhood and spread. When the seeds are falling, I remove hundreds from my car daily, and I know I can't remove them all. I visit local natural area parks, the Columbia River Gorge, Mount Hood, the Coast Range, and other treasured scenic areas regularly. Despite my best intentions, Norway maples make their way to these areas. I understand that the historic integrity of Ladd's Addition is similarly important. It is one of the reasons I live there. But if there is one thing we can learn from history, it is to not repeat the mistakes of the past. Nobody today would advocate for planting English ivy, Himalayan blackberry, or Japanese knotweed in parking strips. But at one time, these were plants of choice among landscape architects. I am convinced that if Mr. Ladd and the landscape architects that designed this beautiful neighborhood knew that Norway maples were invasive, they would have chosen a different tree. We can do that today. We can work with urban forestry to find a more suitable, non-invasive replacement tree for Norway maple so that we can begin reducing the seed source, one that upholds the beauty and history of our neighborhood without compromising the ecology and integrity of our local and regional natural areas. Finally, I've spoken with many of my neighbors about this issue, and most of them never realized that the trees were invasive, but that there surely must be a suitable replacement source. So I urge you to take your time. This is a new issue to most people in the neighborhood, and most haven't had a chance to weigh in yet.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi.
My name's Kathy Sharon, and I'm here to represent the Soil and Water Conservation District for East Multnomah County. We'd like to express support for the city's proposal for Title 11. We have two primary suggestions that we feel would strengthen the policy further, one of which is there will be significant personnel time required to make these rules real on the ground. We believe these trees are among the city's greatest treasures, that they define our region. We urge the council to fund the capacity needed to fully implement this new code. And second, we believe that the diameter of trees to be protected is too large. Large diameter trees, certainly those a diameter of 12 inches or more, provide significant ecosystem services that newly planted trees won't replace for many, many years. These new trees may never provide the same quality of services if the homeowner replaces the large tree with a smaller and or shorter-lived species, as is often the case.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Next are Lori Butler, Justin Wood, John Fiocchi. They'll be followed by Lauren Fielding, John Gibbon, Linda Robinson.
Welcome to City Council. Ms. Butler.
Thank you. Mayor Adams and City Commissioners.
Could you move the mic over just so we can hear you?
You bet.
Thank you.
My name's Lori Butler, and I work in the City of Portland in the Coin Tower. I'm aware that the tree policy tries to fix some of the problems in the old policy, and that in some ways it's better for the building community. But one of the problems I have with the new tree policy is that it doesn't take street trees into the equation from a preservation standpoint or a tree density standpoint. If builders are able to save trees in the right-of-way or are required to plant new trees into the right-of-way, then these should count towards tree preservation and density goals. A tree is a tree, and preserving one or planting one should count towards the overall tree canopy, regardless of its classification as a street tree or not. The mayor's office is proposing an amendment that street trees count towards density requirements on 3,000 square feet or smaller lots. Again, this is an improvement, but we still don't understand why the city is creating two classes of allowed trees if its overall goal is to improve the tree canopy. A tree is a tree, and a homeowner is still responsible for it regardless. Street trees should count towards street density requirements on all lots.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi. Justin Wood. I'm a home builder and a small business owner here in Southwest Portland. And first of all, I'd just like to say thanks to the mayor's office and the BPS staff for working with us. It's been a really good progress we've made working towards a policy that works for all the stakeholders involved. Mainly a couple of the issues that we have with it is we feel that it's fairly complicated still. And even though it's trying to simplify the process, and we got a real nice handout kind of simplifying what the details are, it's still with the four manuals involved for the general homeowner or developer who comes in that it's going to be fairly complicated. The other issue that we're worried about is the costs. I know in the beginning it's going to come out of the general fund, but by 2013 I've read that it's supposed to be, most of it's going to be pushed onto the development community. And if that's true, I think it should be fairly equitable between development community where on development issues, but then if there's issues involved that are just general neighborhood things, that those should continue to come out of the general fund. In front of you, you have some amendments that were sent in conjunction with from the HBA and a group of infill builders, and a couple of the issues we really like to make sure that you guys take a good look at is to consider raising the minimum lot size that's exempted from 3,000 to 5,000 square feet, because when you consider planting, already with the tree density requirements, when you consider planting four or five trees on a 3,500 square foot lot, and you have to remove one tree on that lot and plant two or three more trees in its place, you're talking about planting six or seven trees on a lot that's 3,500 square feet, and there's just not that much room on the lot. And then just lastly, I'd like to consider, if this goes through with the amendments or whatnot, that we take a look at maybe doing this as an 18-month test case and come back in 18 months and revisit any problems and take a look at, you know, can we make this better? What areas have we had that we could improve?
Thank you very much, sir.
Good evening. My name is John Fiocchi of Wiebe Homes, Wiebe Construction, and Wiebe Investments. We're just about ready to move our businesses out of the city of Portland. kind of been transitioning out of the city of Portland a little bit over the last couple years. And my reasoning and my concerns are the cost of doing business in Portland and the cost of a major property owner of maintaining their property. What I look at on the tree policy, I don't want to regurgitate what everybody else is doing. It's my private property. I bought it. I own it. I pay taxes on it. When it's in a city right away, I'm more than glad to work with the city, but I believe that the city even has the street trees flawed. We're currently 55% of the list that we're planting in a 10 to 12 year period is busting up the concrete of our sidewalks and our curbs. We haven't even figured that out. Why do you want to affect what's on my property? We're number 3 in the nation in tree canopy, number 1 in green. I understand the lofty goals of Portland, but this isn't the way to do it. I mean, you have to have some kind of ownership in what you own and to be able to do business. My last home I built here in the city of Portland, $33,000 just in permits and development fees. $33,000 makes a home very unaffordable. $8,500 of that was to parks and recreation. I wish I saw our parks maintained in the fashion that you would like me to maintain my own properties. I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm looking at it from a person that loves his home, loves trees. I love planting trees. The last one I just planted on the spring, or built on the Springwater Corridor above Johnson Creek, I wanted to save a large tree, but I couldn't because even though without understanding the species, they wanted a 20-foot barrier around this tree. Please look into this more. Please.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very emotional, but please, you guys are all smart. Please.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Lauren Fielding, John Gibbon, Linda Robinson are next. They'll be followed by Jim Labby, Scott Fogarty, and Richard Kassebaum.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Welcome back for some of you.
Who's first?
Ms. Robinson.
Okay. I'm Linda Robinson. I live in Outer East Portland. I'll try to get all my new points in the short time allowed. I was one of those people who sat through the four-hour meetings every other Friday for months. People have been talking about how this is too complex, too complicated. It's not. I mean, compared to what we have, it's much simplified, and it has a lot of detail, but only part of that huge four volumes really is the code, a lot of its background information. The other thing I wanted to say is that if you're going to do a standardized size, 20 inches is too big. There are a lot of species that never get to 20 inches, so 20 inches is really too big. The inspectors, when we have the inspections done, we need to make sure that the people inspecting these have tree knowledge. We need to have people with arborist backgrounds, not people who have spent all their years learning about buildings and building codes. We need people who know about trees. We need to fund education. We need to fund incentives. Another thing is about the lat addition, monoculture increases and invites disease. And so that many trees of the same species together is a problem. I have one more thing I want to say about the tree fund. I live in a neighborhood that's at the top of three watersheds. I mean, it's not really high, but we straddle three watersheds. Most of the planting is done using those funds in the riparian areas. We don't have riparian areas when we're in the highlands. I'd like to see a better distribution of how better way to use those funds.
Thank you. Sir.
Hi, my name's Lauren Fielding. I'm the owner of Inexpensive Tree Care, and I'm a certified arborist. I can say that I'm dealing with the public all the time, getting permits all the time, helping older individuals go through the tree permit process. And I'm quite shocked. I guess I'm living in a bubble because personal property rights are very dear to a lot of these people. And I think that the current the things that we have currently in place is more than adequate in terms of canopy. When you tell someone that now they can't do you know, do something or how they're going to do something on their property. It's very evasive. I think that having a 20-inch requirement on a tree is only going to encourage people to make sure they cut that tree down before it gets bigger than 20 inches. So I don't think it's a very smart thing to do. I also want to say that some of the people that I deal with, when I pull up to a house to give an estimate, the one number one thing I'm hoping is it's not on a corner, it's not a city tree. Some people wait 4 or 5 months. There's not enough staffing down at the urban forestry. These people have too much put on them, and it would work a lot better. And people are they have a lot of anger about having to go through the process because they know what them and others have gone through. So I think we need to take that into consideration.
Thanks for your testimony.
My name is John Gibbon. I'm chairman of the Southwest Land Use Committee. I was a member of the Southwest Committee that worked on the tree project. I have to respectfully disagree with the last speaker. I think it's essential that we adopt Title 11 and centralize all the codes in various sections of the current city code so that we have one place to go for to deal with trees. I'm a homeowner. I live in a subdivision that I'll give you a roadmap to before I leave tonight of two spots in Southwest that I urge you and go to look at in this next month between Lesser Road and Capitol Highway. You'll see in my roadmap four spots where tree issues are illustrated. I urge you to go and look at them. I also encourage you to come into my Quail Park neighborhood where for 40 years now we've had tree regulation and done one-to-one replacement of trees. It's not an inexpensive process. As a homeowner, I spent $10,000 to $20,000 over the last 15 years, but it's something that's worthwhile.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all for your testimony.
Next up, Jim Leiby, Scott Fogarty, Richard Kassebaum. They'll be followed by Mark Dane, Patty Schnabel, and Patricia Kolak.
Please begin.
Jim Leiby, Audubon Society of Portland. And I was also one of the individuals who served on the citywide tree stakeholder group. I want to thank the staff for their tremendous work on this. I've served in a lot of planning processes, and this was incredible in terms of the staff work and the people they brought together. I guess on that note, one of the key points I want to make is around the complexity that has been mentioned. You know, I think Linda put it really well. It is complex. This is a complex issue. What we've done here is reduce a lot of the unnecessary complexity in the codes and in the city program. I think that alone is going to be huge for how citizens engage in these issues. And my job at Audubon Society of Portland, I answer the phone a lot with people who call, and we get a lot of calls with tree issues. I'm looking forward to this hotline taking some heat off of me personally. The other thing I wanted to highlight is I personally was involved in a study that we finished a couple years ago. Is a regional assessment of local urban forestry programs in the region. And it was a big project 2 years with PSU, and on a number of points, Portland is not on the cutting edge. There's a lot of jurisdictions that tree regulations much more comprehensively. You saw it in some of the staff report. Mitigate tree removal much more aggressively. So this is moving us up in the league, but by no means to the top. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi, my name is Richard Kassebaum. I'm a builder in the city of Portland for the last 14 years. I'm glad that we are trying to simplify the tree policy and coordinate it into one title. I admonish the staff for all they've done. In regards to penalization versus incentive for the trees, I agree with Dan that once a tree is cut, it's gone, and let's find a way to keep that from happening. And one way to do that is to incentivize those who are cooperating with the code and penalize hard those who are abusing it. So in that regard, there's one detail in this code. It's $300 per inch for replacement cost. If you can't replace it on your site, you got to pay $300 per inch. Those who are cooperating with the code, that is rather almost like a penalty for us as a builder. and it will actually, for some people, not me, but it may encourage them to cut prior to development, because once they do develop it in a cooperative manner, they're going to have to pay so much money to replace that tree if they can't put it on their yard. So I encourage incentive measures, which would help builders to encourage them to keep the trees or plant new ones, not at $300 an inch.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Scott Fogarty, if he's here, Mark Dane, Patty Schnabel, Patricia Kodak. We're thinning out here. Are you Scott?
I'll be all three.
That's not here.
All right, Scott's not here, so.
Okay, looks like we've got our three.
Why don't you go ahead and begin?
Hi, my name's Mark Dane. I'm a planner. I've been working in Portland since 1991. I'm here specifically to talk about infill development and the effects of this ordinance on that. Infill development is the greenest form of development. It utilizes existing infrastructure. It does not use green land. But the biggest concern that we have is that every part of the city needs its pint of blood. PDOT needs us to do Haas Street improvements that cost $25,000 a house. We have our 8,000 SDC from the Park District. We have our drainage swales from BES that are 8 foot wide that require me to rip up the sidewalk and rip up the curb. We have BDS that require me to put my parking spaces 28 feet because we can't park in the first 10 feet of the property. We now have this tree policy that is going to require more consultants, more bureaucratic costs, and more time. Specifically, and this is my key, if it takes a builder 8 months to go from start to sale, he can turn his capital over 3 times in 2 years. If it takes 6 months, his capital can be turned over 4 times. That's a 33% increase in fees, SDCs, jobs, and the multiplier effect of housing. I do believe that people who are in violation should have the severest of penalties. They take down a tree, they lose a finger. Gives you 10 trees. The point that I'm trying to make is that violators make it hard for the rest of us. This is Title 33. This is the tree code. This is what we do all the time. When I started, it was this thick. Every time we try to streamline the code, it gets thicker. This doesn't even comply with OSHA standards. We need to have, one, if there is a less than 10% change to an approved tree plan, there should be a staff-level decision 1 week. Review time takes about 10 minutes. Two, building inspectors should be given the opportunity and the ability to ensure compliance. They are smart, efficient, and trusted, and they can do it with the help of the city forester. Three, give the option of planting trees in the planter strip. Trees are generally moved from private property after the house is put in, not from the planter strip. Give the opportunity to put the trees in the planter strip. That's where the land is. That's where they won't be taken out. Four, the code will sort itself out. It's a bit of a mess, but I can understand because you had so many cooks in the kitchen. But after 1 year, remove those options that aren't used. Sometimes I feel like I'm in an episode of Hoarders where nothing ever gets removed from the code. If it's not used, get rid of it. Next item, where you have a 2-inch tree, offer 2 1-inch trees or 3 3/4-inch trees. Give that opportunity, same number of inches. But eventually, whereas you had 1 2-inch tree, you can have 3 trees, and eventually you will get more inches off of that same numbers. The canopy has grown. The code is proposed. It's not a good use of staff time. It's not a good use of public funds. We can do it better by streamlining. And honestly, if you want to make the biggest difference, the worst area is the Port of Portland. If you want to start planting trees, start with the airport. I mean, the
all port. Right. So. I didn't understand that last comment. But
it's
okay.
That's just a personal thing.
Port representative left.
Yeah, the port representative left. If you go back through the city's website, you'll also see, I think, 5 major code revisions, many of which took code out. So go ahead. Who would like to begin next?
All right, I will. My name is Patricia Kozak, and I'm a citizen in support of the Citywide Tree Project. We are here today to tell our story. Our story shows that the current system is not functioning the best that it can be. I live across the street from an undeveloped lot, 1 block east of Ladd's Addition. that used to have a beautiful green canopy across the street. Now it is a barren lot with little to no vegetation. On December 6, 2009, a Sunday, I met the new developer who was there, I guess, getting an estimate from his tree cutters. He said he was planning on cutting the trees to make way for four homes. I immediately contacted my neighbors to see if the developer needed a permit. My neighbors believed that he didn't need one. I spent the next few days trying to find out if permits were needed or if he already obtained them. I found the city website, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I didn't know who to call or what to do next. On Saturday, December 12th, I woke up to chainsaws. Frantically, I got on the city website to see if there was a number to call to try and stop this. I found a hotline number, but because it was a Saturday, no one from Urban Forestry was available. My gut told me that what this developer was doing wasn't right, and he ended up clearing the lot of almost all the vegetation that included a stand of 13 trees, one of which was a Douglas fir that was 18 inches in diameter, and a large red maple 24 inches in diameter, and many unknown species. Urban Forestry showed up on Monday and informed me that the developer did in fact need a permit. And they placed the value of the two identifiable trees at $24,000. The developer's fine was set at $13,200, and a mitigation plan for tree replacement and the contractor's fine was $1,000. Eventually, the developer's fine was reduced to $6,000, and the mitigation plan was waived in lieu of the $6,000 he paid. The contractor paid $500. So basically, in short, the current system isn't working, and thank you very much for this.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi.
Hi. This is our opinion, and I hope it doesn't sound too brash, but we feel that the Bureau of Development Services is basically condoning the developer's unethical behavior, as they state that there are no trees on the site to preserve, so therefore the developer can move forward with his plans without tree preservation. We also feel that the Urban Forestry Division is also condoning his actions by reducing the fine so greatly. We have also been informed that this sort of thing with development in the city of Portland is not unusual and happens frequently. It's hard to believe that these same citizens or these same city employees are residents of the city of Portland. We are pleased with the hard work that the citywide tree project has made, but we still feel that there is a piece missing, and that is a forum for neighbors such as ourselves to appeal to an impartial party. It is our opinion that the city's current process regarding final decisions of trees and their removal and the fines implemented has failed the people that really matter, and those are the people that live in the city. As it stands now, one governing body and possibly only one person within that governing body makes the final decisions. And this happens without a public hearing or the approval of council or commission. It's unfortunate that these decisions are made that affect an entire neighborhood and the neighborhood is silence. The public needs to have a voice when they disagree with the decisions that are made in their neighborhoods. We're asking the council, please implement an impartial public appeal process for decisions that are made by the City of Portland that currently exclude our citizens. It is important to approve the emergency line for the tree removal concerns. Please implement a way to look up online to check if someone has a permit to cut. We do agree with the fines that make a difference, and we believe that this should basically be the value, the set value of the trees that were removed. And we also believe that this should include monetary value as well as a mediation plan for tree replacement on the site or somewhere in the city, because we all know the importance of the tree canopy in our city, and no backing down for first offenders. One last thing, we would like our experience in this testimony to go on record as a statistic with the Portland City Council, and thank you for your time.
Could you give me your name again, please?
Pardon me?
Could you give me your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, Patricia Schnabel.
Thank you.
Two Patricias.
Thanks for being here. Thank you very much. How many more?
We have seven to go.
Okay, we're down to 5 seconds each. No, I'm kidding.
Nick Hunt, will you come up? Marcella Vinokur, Jim Wentworth Plato. They'll be followed by Craig Chisholm, Margot Barnett, and Wayne Pearson.
Welcome. Go ahead and begin.
My name is Nicholas Hunt with Suncrest Construction. I'm a small builder in Southeast Portland. Our office is at 5906 Southeast 83rd. I believe the tree policy is going forward with what Portland needs, and it's helping out streamline a lot of stuff for builders. The one point I want to bring up tonight is to change the tree preservation from 35% in the new code to 33%. That moves it to an even one-third On the 2% makes a big difference on lots with 3 to 6 trees on it. A lot with 3 trees, the 2%, you miss it by 1.7, the 33 or the 35, so you have to save 66% of the trees compared to 33. Also on